This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program.
Welcome to Faith in Action. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Eyre.
Hello, great to be with you.
And Bridget, boy, we want to thank everybody for a great turnout and a great evening for our Catholic Radio annual dinner. We had both bishops this year, Archbishop Thompson and Bishop Doherty. And we also had one of our biggest crowds ever. It was a lot of fun. We had a great silent auction and just a fun evening. And it was a fundraiser, and it did indeed raise some much-needed funds for Catholic Radio. So we want to say thank you to everybody who showed up as a guest. Of course, we couldn't do it without you. All of the volunteers that behind the scene that made everything work, including my wife Sharon, who became almost full-time
employee, right?
employee as a volunteer for several weeks before the event. It's just a big event, but we enjoy doing it, and we enjoy meeting all of our listeners. So thank you to everybody that came. Thank you to the businesses that underwrote the event. Franciscan Health stepped up big time and helped us with the cost of the event. Also, Marian University and Gemco Constructors, all of those. Plus, a lot of other businesses helped us with items for the silent auction and buying tables and various things like that. So thank you to everybody. It was a great event, and we're going to do it again next year.
Yeah, and this year we celebrated, and we're still celebrating our 15-year anniversary. So happy birthday to Catholic Radio, right?
Everybody got a piece of cake there, too.
Yeah, they did. It was good, too. I want more. All right. Well, today we have a very interesting topic. Every topic is interesting, but this one is kind of near and dear to my heart. I am very, very interested in icons, and today we are going to be talking about icons and iconography and how they can help us better enter into prayer and to the mystery of God. And our guest today is Brian Gosshorn. He is of St. Athanasius Byzantine Catholic Church, and he's here to enlighten us about icons. So welcome to Faith in Action, Brian.
Thank you, Bridget.
And I guess we'll start off with the basics. What are icons? What are they? Because I think depending on who you are, that might mean something maybe to someone that's high tech, what an icon is, like maybe on your screen. But what is an icon from the Catholic or Christian tradition?
Okay, so an icon, the Greek word icon, I'm using the modern Greek pronunciation here. Icon basically means image, and certainly that would be an appropriate term in even the high-tech world, because it's obviously a reference to the image that people click on. But in the Christian tradition, it's really referring to the image of the presence of God. So, you know, it represents the presence of God, but even more than that, it reveals what is depicted in the icon. Many times people like to speak of it as a window into heaven.
And that's how I've heard it referred to. And that I really like that, because we're all trying to get closer to God, you know, in one way or another. So what would the purpose of an icon be then?
Okay. Well, the purpose of it, you could say ultimately, is to deify us. What I mean by that, so this is a Greek word, theosis, which basically means, so sometimes people say deification, divinization. It's really the concept of participating in the divine nature. That's the goal of it.
Okay. So connecting with God and participating in that maybe relationship, is that what you're saying? Or is it more specific than that?
Okay. So we could say that, you know, one may look at an icon and could you could say it's a visual for the eye, something that gives us that sense that God is with us. You know, think of it also as like the gospel. When we hear the gospel makes present for us the events that are being read. And so, likewise, the icon is the gospel for the eye.
Interesting. Well, let me ask you this. Where did icons come from? When did they originate? And it seems like they're very, very prominent in the Eastern Rite of the Church and in the Orthodox, with the Orthodox as well. So talk about that. Where'd they come from?
I like to say that it begins with eternity.
Yeah. That's a great answer.
You know, that Christ is the perfect image of the invisible God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, of course, he becomes man. So here we got the perfect image that now we can see. But even before that, I mean, you could begin with Adam and Eve, right? We are icons of God. We're in the image of God.
That's a great...
Now, when you're talking about the type of icons that we're looking at, people are used to photographs and movies and TV where things look super real.
Mm-hmm.
And an icon is an image, but they're kind of intentionally not made to look exactly real, are they?
Right. You're absolutely right about that. It's not intended to be a photograph.
Right.
I mean, for instance, if you were to take an image of a saint, like say a photograph from, say, a saint from the 20th century or 21st century, and then you were to write an icon of him, it's going to look a little different. And one of the things here is that it's trying to highlight the incorruptibility of that saint. Okay, so again, it's an image of the presence of God. It's showing that he is deified, that he is participating in the divine nature, that he's sharing in the glory of God. So all of the corruptible aspects of man, you know, in this life are intended to disappear when writing an icon.
We're talking with Brian Gashorn. He is the icon person to telling us all about icons. He's our guest today, and he's from St. Athanasius Byzantine Catholic Church. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and then also your background and maybe how you got interested in icons?
Sure. So first off, I'm married to my lovely wife, Suzanne, and I've got four children, Cecilia, Gregory, Anastasia, and Athanasius.
Ah.
Yeah. Yes.
All familiar names to people familiar with the Bible. And
absolutely. You're right. Or the saints, right?
Right.
Right. And so, yeah, I've got four children. I've got a master's degree in theology at Franciscan University of Steubenville. And
we have a lot of guests from there, and it's just really amazing how many people that are really living their faith that attended school there. So it's really exciting to see for us. But go on.
Oh, yeah. I tend to run into people who are also graduates from people I didn't know at the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were there at different times. But, yeah, it's very interesting.
And you're in ministry, and then you run into it's like, oh, you went to school there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Sure. And I was for 11 years teaching over at Guerin Catholic High School in Noblesville. It was a wonderful time. Learned a lot, you know, about teaching theology.
Students taught you a lot, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's true that they'll ask questions that even when I was in graduate school, I didn't really think about that.
Uh-huh.
You know,
and you had to go. I'll get back to you, right?
Yeah, that happened a lot in my first year teaching.
Sure.
I
think that happens in parenting too. I'll get back to you on that one. But then, how did you get into icons?
Okay. Well, you know, even before that, you know, I wanted to kind of mention that. Currently, I'm teaching over at Saints Joan of Arc and Patrick School. I'm the middle school religion teacher, and I also happen to also be the music teacher over there, also teaching third grade through eighth grade. And my role is to really get them ready for Mass to sing the hymns.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so before I was in my first 3 years of college, I was actually in music school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you are a man of many talents.
Right, and that's how I...
And God's using you, right?
Yeah, I mean, he got me as the lead cantor, actually, at St. Athanasius the Great, Byzantine Catholic Church. You know, so, yeah, and that's a lot of fun. And it really is a fulfilling ministry. You know, to go back to your question now regarding my interest in iconography. Well, first off, I was brought up, actually, a Roman Catholic, okay? And I ended up going Byzantine eventually. It wasn't not a decision overnight by any means, but about 15 years ago, I had watched a TV show on EWTN, The Light of the East. There were two priests on there. One of them was given the nickname Father Icon, and he went through and spoke about them, and I just found it really interesting, and so it moved me to go to a Byzantine Catholic parish, and I actually went to a lot of different Eastern traditions, some that use icons quite a bit, like the Byzantine, but then ones that don't really use them so much, such as the East Syriac tradition, you know, for instance, the Chaldeans really don't, they have icons, but they're very few in their tradition. You know, and so that really kind of got me interested in it. And so eventually when I was at Franciscan U, I started going to a Divine Liturgy every Sunday. And so gradually I made my way into Byzantine Christianity. You know, it's one of those things, you know, you don't plan on doing it, you just end up there.
Well, I want to ask you a question about that, because I'm, my understanding, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, is that Byzantine Catholics are Catholics, just like we're Catholics, but it's just a different rite. So they're, all the different rites of Catholicism are in, we're all in communion with each other. It's the same Eucharist, although it's a little bit different. I mean, it's the same Jesus,
right,
but it's in a different form, the way you guys are given communion. We can talk, that could be a whole topic on that.
Yes, that's correct.
But you are Catholic, but it's just a different rite. And I want you to talk about Divine Liturgy and how that is, how it's a little different than Mass in the Byzantine rite.
Okay.
Because I've been there, and it's very interesting.
So, the Divine Liturgy, it's very similar and very different, really, all at the same time. I mean, first off, you've got the same basic structure, in as much as you've got rites that are introductory, and then you have a liturgy of the word and a liturgy of the Eucharist, and you have a dismissal. So the basic structure is really the same as what you see, particularly in the Roman rite. But it's also very different, too, in that there's a lot of different words that are used. You have different Eucharistic prayers. Actually, there are three of them that we have. The most common is the liturgy of St. John Chrysostom. On certain occasions, we use St. Basil the Great's anaphora. So that's the Eucharistic prayer. So we would use that on occasions such as every Sunday of the Great Fast, Great Lent. We would use that, for instance, on the eve of let's see here, it was a Christmas, so the Nativity of the Lord, or the evening of Theophany. The Feast of St. Basil, we would also use it on his day. And then there's a couple times in the year when it's permitted to use the Liturgy of St. James, which I have not actually heard, but it's very, very long. You know, one of these days I'm going to get my pastor to do this, but most of the work is on him. He's done it before, and he's told me it takes about an hour just to get through the Eucharistic prayer alone. Wow. Yes.
Well, one thing I noticed when I went, and maybe this is still the same, but for my recollection, the entire liturgy is sung. Is that true?
Yes. There's a few spots where it's spoken, but other than that, yeah, it's sung. And, you know, I get to wake up in the morning and go in at 9 o'clock on Sunday to do morning prayer, which is also all sung, and we do an hour of it. Then I have to go and canter an hour and 20 minutes or so of the Divine Liturgy. So I get over 2 hours of singing on Sunday, you know, and some people ask me, how do you do that? You know, really, you have to use sound form and your singing, and you know, sometimes I amaze myself that, wow, I really did get through that, and, you know, no pain, right?
Well, God is good. You know. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about how you can use icons in your prayer life. So stay tuned for more Faith in Action.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer. Jim Ganley's in the studio with me, as well as our guest, Brian Goshorn. He is a parishioner at St. Athanasius Byzantine Catholic Church, and we've been talking about that and icons. And St. Athanasius has a lot of icons. Can you talk about maybe a little bit of what the featured icons are and maybe even who St. Athanasius is?
Okay, yeah, sure. So when you walk into a Byzantine parish, you will typically see a tetrapod. It's a table, four legs, and there will be an icon on it. Typically, it's maybe an icon of the day, so the feast day or some other icon, and you usually would come in, you'd bow before it, make the sign of the cross, kiss it, and again, you know, the honor that is given to the icon really is, you know, transfers to the prototype, as St. Basil the Great would say. So that's one thing that you would see. You'd see icons certainly around the walls and in the altar area, but the place I would look most when you come to our parish would be the iconostasis, the icon screen.
And that's at the front of the church, and it separates basically the congregation from the altar. Is that right?
Right. In fact, the way we would speak of it is that it's not so much separating it as it is uniting the two. The iconostasis is really intended to be a sign of the incarnation.
Oh, okay.
You know, just, you know, how the incarnation brings God and man together.
Okay, I
so,
like that.
You know, think of it as heaven and earth is brought together. You know, we're very eschatological in our way of...
bringing out the big words, right?
Yes, yes.
I'm a theology major too, so I know what you're talking about, but that's what is eschatology?
Right. So this is really, you know, pointing to those last things.
Okay.
Okay. So in this case, heaven, right?
Right.
So heaven is here on earth. Okay, that's kind of the idea. And again, you look at the icons, you know, they're windows into heaven. Well, what's on the other side, you could ask? Well, heaven, right? It's with us, right? God is with us. As far as the arrangement of the icons, here's what you would see. So first off, you've got the royal doors, or the holy doors, which are in the center. You'll always notice that there are the four gospel writers. Particularly in our church, you will see that, but that's typical in other places. And you will see an icon of the Annunciation. And this is there because it was at this moment that God became man. So again, really highlighting the incarnation, you know, the uniting of humanity and divinity. What you'll find on the south side of the church, so the south side of the iconostasis, you will find Christ, and then after that you will see a deacon door, which will always have either a deacon, a saint of a deacon, or an angel. In our church, if I recall, we have Saint Michael on that side. And then moving on further, south on the icon screen, you will see the patron saint of the church, so Saint Athanasius the Great. On the left side now, I guess that would be the north side of the church, you would see Mary. And then moving on further north, you'll see another deacon door, which has, in our church, it has Saint Stephen, the proto-martyr, on it. And then you keep moving on north, you will also find the icon of St. Nicholas, the patron saint, really, of the Byzantine churches, whether they be Catholic or Orthodox.
Mm-hmm. It's just really unbelievable to see the beauty of those icons. And I want to ask you, I actually brought a couple of my icons that I have from home into the studio. And just kind of as a visual, one thing that I've noticed, and I know that the hands and the position of the person that's featured in the icon, they all mean something. So, for instance, I have an icon here of Saint Thomas, and his hands are in a particular way. Mm-hmm. It's almost like sign language.
And that may dovetail with a question I was going to ask earlier on. You mentioned a word that I was trying to remember, and you said write an icon. Now, when we think icons, most people would think of as pictures on a wall, and most people would think of painting a picture. But you don't paint an icon, you write an icon. What's the difference?
Okay. Well, that's a common language used to speak of writing an icon. It's fine if you speak of it as painting, because that is the action of it. But the term writing, I think, is really to emphasize that you're writing the gospel, you know, in a visual form.
That's really cool. Okay, now I want to get back to my question on the hand, because I'm dying to know the answer to that. What does that mean?
Yeah, so he's got these weird crooked fingers, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it has to do with Greek now. Now, if you were to look at a priest in divine liturgy, when he gives you a blessing, he puts his fingers that same way.
Oh, okay.
Now, it has to do with Greek letters. Now, so you've got the index finger... so it's standing up. It might be slightly crooked. That is the iota in Greek. Okay, then the middle finger bent really a little bit more. It's supposed to signify sigma.
Okay.
Those two letters are the first and last letters of the Greek word Isus.
Okay.
So Jesus.
Yeah.
Then we see the ring finger and the thumb together in this, you know, they look, you know, they're just touching, but frequently you'll see them crossed. And that is representing the Greek letter chi. Okay. Often when we transliterate it, it looks like a CH.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is also sigma. So those are the first and last letters of the Greek word Christos.
So are the hands different in every icon? I mean, they can be different, right? So, when they have their hand like this, does it mean Jesus? Is that what it's saying?
Yes, Jesus Christ. So the idea is, again, this is how a priest would bless you in the Byzantine Rite, okay, with his fingers that way. So it's really the blessing of Christ that you're receiving.
Oh,
that is really neat.
Interesting.
Now, do you know anything about this icon that I'm pulling? Our Lady of Perpetual Help. Now, she doesn't, her hands are just with holding Jesus's hand in there. So that, she's probably not doing the hand thing like this in this one. See, this one has the Jesus Christ mm-hmm. blessing, right?
Right. So what I do know about this icon, Our Lady of Perpetual Help, is that it's understood that Jesus, you know, very young, is looking, he has knowledge of what he's going to go through, the cross. I mean, if you look at the two angels there, they've got these items of the cross. It looks like the nails, the cross.
I never noticed that.
And, you know, it invokes in him this, you know, this emotion, you know, this, you know, he's kind of afraid, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not, you know, of course he's going to accept the cross. He does that, but similar to the Garden of Gethsemane, right? He doesn't really want to go through that. And so he is coming closer to his mother. She's holding his hand, giving him comfort.
That's really odd. I've never noticed that.
Now, most of the icons have kind of an older, kind of darker look to them. And I guess it raises the question, are all of the icons already made, or can you make another? I mean, can you make a new icon today?
Sure, it is possible to make another icon. I mean, that's what our tradition does, right? There's always going to be more saints, so logically there's going to be more icons,
okay.
Right? You could just say that there are basic patterns that tend to be that are used. I know sometimes that we'll see among the Russians they'll use some different colors. I think the Romanians will use maybe a darker background. I've seen that. I've seen them in Greek churches as well. So yeah, I mean there is certainly some freedom there. My personal favorite, I always like to have the gold background because it really brings out the idea that the saint is in glory, you know. And often you'll see with the eyes of a saint, their eyes might be a little bit bugged out
mm-hmm.
a little bit, and it's kind of that idea of contemplating, you know, that uncreated light, you know.
I'm glad that you brought up that different symbolism, because they do look different, you know. The images mm-hmm. look, and sometimes they look a little weird. But I will say, I want to get back to this question I had. When did these kind of emerge as an art style? Do you have any sense of when they emerged in terms of these kind of, you know, depictions? Or have they been around really since the beginning of time to a certain extent?
Okay, yeah, we did sidestep that question.
No, that's okay. You had a great answer.
Yeah. So we could say that it's been understood as a tradition that the gospel writer Luke wrote the first icon, you know, of the Virgin Mary. In fact, if you see an icon of St. Luke, sometimes it'll show him writing the icon of the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Mm, okay.
Very interesting.
That is really interesting. So mm-hmm. all the way back to mm-hmm. then, it seems like there's a resurgence in iconography, because
yes.
I've seen a lot of times these parishes, when they do renovations, they'll have new art, and mm-hmm. a lot of them are really old art. There are these icons.
Yes.
What's your thought on that? I mean, are you seeing that too? And what is the importance of this kind of religious or religious art kind of resurgence in our culture?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you are you noticing the resurgence in art?
I don't know that I've noticed the resurgence in religious art in general, but I've definitely noticed it with iconography. Definitely. I noticed, particularly in the Western Church, I've noticed there are different vendors who are writing icons, selling them. I've noticed there have been some Benedictine monasteries who've been iconographers there. They're selling them. Over where I used to work, St. Theodore Guerin, they commissioned somebody to write an icon. In fact, it's hanging up right there in the gym. I've also got, there was a colleague of mine when I worked at Guerin Catholic who also took on a fascination with icons. And at the time, I don't think she'd ever gone to a Byzantine liturgy, but very interesting that she thought that was really cool, the icons and the meanings behind it. And so, there's definitely a resurgence of this.
So for those people who might have an interest in learning more about icons, do you have any, resources that you would point people to in terms of learning more, whether it's a book or a website or anything like that? Do you have any suggestions in that area?
Sure. Here's just some places you could go to. So I had recently looked at a lecture from a Russian Orthodox bishop, Metropolitan Hilarion Alfeyev. He had this lecture that was titled Theology of Icon in the Orthodox Church. Very, very good source right there. He goes into some of the anthropological aspects, theological aspects, mystical aspects, cosmological. He really goes into a lot of stuff, the ethical. There was also a book, I've not read it, but it's called Praying with Icons by a man named Jim Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about, I want to say it's about 200, 300 pages.
And what's your last one, and then we'll thank you because we're just about out of time.
Okay, another one that you can find online. It was actually in a monastic journal in 2003. It's unknown exactly who the writer was, but it's titled "The Icon: History, Symbolism, and Meaning."
Sounds like some great resources we'll check out. Maybe we can even put a link to those when we put up the podcast. Brian, you've been such a great guest talking about icons. Our guest has been Brian Goshorn, a parishioner at St. Athanasius Byzantine Catholic Church. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
God bless.
Bless you.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again or any past episode at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.